I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Playing a long drive, there it is, number 500, the career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith.
Rollins slides, Rollins has won it, they stream out of the dugout, yeah. Rollins by yeah. Near third, this game is over.
It is out of here, 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Helen.
Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 207. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and NumberFire.com. Follow me on Twitter at John Stolness, and I'm joined, as I am every Sunday night, by my two great friends from The Good Fight. First, Liz Rocher, the managing editor of The Good Fight, and also from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter, as you probably already do, at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and let's bring in also Justin Clue, the assistant managing editor from The Good Fight. You also know Justin from The Dirty Inning and from the Continued Success podcast that he does with Liz on Patreon right now, but we'll be moving that over to the main feed at some point as well. Follow Justin on Twitter, at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up, man?
Hello, everyone. What a weekend. What a sport.
Isn't Toronto the worst place on earth?
I've 162 been there. Games is too many. I'm telling you right now. It's too many because this is like, you know, this is a series that shouldn't happen. Not because it's interleague, but just because I say so.
An abomination. You know? I agree.
It is
unnatural.
So bad.
It defies the laws of science and nature. And we all suffered because of it. So, yeah, I am right there with you, Liz.
It's kind of funny. This is one of those weekends, and normally when we come in to do this podcast on Sunday night, there's usually two or three really juicy things to kind of bite into, and there's really not a whole lot this week other than discussing where we are on the Phillies' chances. But before we get into the weekend and before we get into where things stand and everything, something just occurred to me that I thought we could probably we could open up the show with, and that is interleague play, because I hate going to Toronto. I hate going to Toronto to play the Blue Jays, and it's not just because of the memories of 1993. The only time a sporting event has ever made me cry in my entire life was when I was 17 years old watching Joe Carter hit the home run. It's the only time sports ever made me cry. I've been mad. I've been depressed. I've been shocked into silence, but I've never cried with the exception of the Joe Carter home run. But it has nothing to do with that. I've just come around to the fact, guys, that I hate interleague play. I would love for interleague play to go away forever. Am I the only one?
I think we may have. I think Liz and I touched on this on a Continued Success. It was around the All-Star game, and we went into interleague play because I think the argument was that like the All-Star game is supposed to stand up on its own without
yes.
needing any reasons, because the National and American League playing each other is such a bizarre, unnatural thing. I think. Maybe like they do, if they want to bring it in like a trend and just have like 3 years in a row where each of the teams plays each of the teams, and then it goes away for 10, 20 years or something. Like, I don't know. I mean, I could see that being okay. But at this point, it's not really a thing anymore. Like, nobody's like, oh, we've got to catch one of these interleague series. I mean, maybe there's an uptick in attendance when the Phillies play the Red Sox or Yankees or something, but that's just inviting some of the worst fan bases in baseball into
exactly.
the Phillies stadium. So, I don't know. As far as appeal goes, I would say no more than a normal baseball game, which kind of makes the whole point of interleague play not exist anymore. So I could do without it. I don't really need interleague play anymore. And if I'm going to echo my sentiments from the last time we talked about it, I want the two leagues to hate each other and consider themselves rivals. I guess interleague play would help with that, but again, them just being two teams and not all-star teams makes it a lot less interesting. So, yeah, I could be done with interleague play and not really care.
What do you think, Liz?
I guess I don't sort of don't see a point to it anymore, but I also don't see a point to not having it. I mean, there are two leagues, but I also don't necessarily see a reason why they shouldn't play each other. I also, part of the problem with interleague play, and Scott Fransky mentioned this today on the radio broadcast, is that the Phillies have played the AL East a lot.
Yeah.
They play them a lot in the past. They haven't played a lot of other teams. I looked at the schedule for 2019. They have a 3-game road trip to what I think is Minnesota, unless I misread it.
Nope.
But they don't have a return trip.
Hmm.
I think so
they don't come back from Minnesota.
Minnesota comes
stuck
to
in Minnesota forever.
Minnesota, no. The Twins come to Citizens Bank Park, and there's no trip out to Minnesota to see them, which is disappointing. Like, what is the point? As soon as I saw that at the beginning of the schedule, I thought, now I want to schedule a trip to Minneapolis, St. Paul, because I've been there a couple of times. I really enjoyed it. I love Target Field. I'd love to see the Phillies play there. The only time I've been to Target Field twice, and I sat in the nosebleeds both times. I'd love to sit a little closer, but there's no return trip. Like, why bother?
That does bring up a good point.
They play the Red Sox again next year. Like,
yeah.
Why?
Yeah, enough with that. Enough with the damn Red Sox already.
I'm tired of the AL East so much.
It's the Red Sox and then the AL Central teams, which is, yeah, again, confusing. That's not the first time that that's happened. They have, like, one divisional outlier in their interleague schedule. But I mean, I get it. It's cool to open it up to other teams and let Phillies fans experience other, you know, potentially other stadiums, like people being like, oh, we could go see Target Field. The Phillies are playing, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, yeah, when they don't do that very often and the Phillies get stuck playing the AL East teams, that means, playing the Yankees and Red Sox in the past couple of years is no easy feat. It's not something you want to do very often.
the Phillies don't have a natural rival like the Yankees and the Mets do, and you like the Nationals and the Orioles do, and that's the other thing. The Nationals get the Orioles every year, and the Orioles are piss. I mean, it's like you get the Red Sox.
That's
who
not
are,
fair.
It's not fair at all. It's a complete travesty. And you know, the Mets get the Yankees every year, and you know, a lot of times that's not good. You know, for I don't care if the Mets get hosed, but you know, it's certainly not fair in a lot of different ways. Some of these natural rivalries that they have to continue to. And I know one of the main reasons they started interleague play when they did back in the 90s was so that Philadelphia fans could see Ken Griffey Jr., the Mariners' big superstar, come to Philadelphia. Well, as we've seen, those American League West teams come to Philadelphia, what, once every 6 years, maybe? Mm-hmm. Maybe, if you're lucky. So what, you get Ken Griffey Jr. once in his career, maybe?
Mike Trout.
Yeah, we've seen Mike Trout once since this whole damn thing started. So.
Yeah.
It's not for me anymore. The only thing I like about it is we get the DH for a few days, but that's a whole other kettle of fish. Anyway, I think that was a needed discussion because I've been thinking about that all year with playing the Red Sox and the Yankees and those damn fans coming into Citizens Bank Park. And we can jump now to the Phillies, who had a rough week, rough weekend in Toronto, on the heels of a rough week in Washington. Finished up a 2-4 road trip by losing the first two games in each of their series and then winning the finale. You know, it's kind of interesting. I thought one of the – and they – by the – just so everybody who didn't look at the standings, Philly's still 3 games behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. The Braves lost 2 out of 3 to the Marlins this weekend. The Braves are trying. They're trying to keep the Phillies in this thing. And I think my mindset, guys, has changed from, oh, we missed out on an opportunity to gain some ground, to more now, oh, thank God we're not farther behind. You know, it's changed a little bit now because now the Braves feel like clear front runners to me, but Atlanta, the reason the Phillies are still in this is that Atlanta is so very much like the Phillies, Justin. They're young. They're a year ahead of schedule. They have a higher ceiling than the Phillies do because they have guys like Acuna and Albies and Freddie Freeman. They have a couple of legitimate postseason award contenders, and the Phillies just don't have that. Phillies might have a little bit better pitching, but right now, the Braves feel like the front runner, and the Phillies kind of have to track them down. But right now, I'm not at the point where I'm feeling like, oh, we could have closed it to one game this weekend. I'm just kind of more like, thank God we're not farther behind.
Yeah, I think we could paint success in broader strokes at this point. We were at a when the Phillies were leading the division, I think, considering like, oh, well, they could stand to improve in the following ways. And now that we say things like, I think that the offense should score. That's when you realize that that's where the bar is. Yeah, I'd say that at this point, just to see the Phillies like win a series would be cool. Then I would think, all right, now let's check how the Braves are doing. Oh, look, they lost. The Phillies are actually gaining ground on them. I don't think this is where their concentration should be at this point. This isn't a team that necessarily deserves to be watching the standings or watching the scoreboard after the last few weeks of play they've put out there. And I know we're going to talk about this, but that kind of goes into them saying like, oh, we had this really special intensity today that really helped us win. Which honestly pissed me off more than some of the baseball we've seen in the past couple weeks. So, I don't know if you can consider anybody but the Braves as in charge of this division at this point. Three games is not a lot, and it's certainly not an insurmountable number of games to make up on a team, especially with over a full month of baseball left to play. But if anybody watching both of these teams can see, there's just like a definitive difference. I would say the Braves are fully capable of some of the pitfalls of a young team like the Phillies, but the Phillies have just been stepping in them so much more with so much more frequency and different pitfalls every time. We had been saying something to that effect. I mean, I feel like the past couple of weeks, but then I think Kevin Cooney said something confirming the sentiment that the Phillies lose in so many different ways. It's never the same way. It's never like, well, they just need a closer or they just need that bat in the middle of the lineup. It's different every night, and that's evident of a young team, and that's how I view this team. They've never been an efficient, well-oiled machine. They've been like a loosely assembled old-timey bicycle that's been wobbling through the season and successfully staying together, but things are really starting to, it feels like their parts are starting to fall off, and you're seeing some really, really bad games as a result of that. So, you know, hopefully they can keep it together, but in my view of this, I really didn't view them as a team that was going to make a deep playoff run, even as well as they were playing at certain points. At this point, I would say that this is a team that if they do make the playoffs, it's because they see the like Wheel of Fortune spin back to their direction, and they catch some luck, and then a couple of guys turn it around. Like you want to put it on like, oh, let's hope two or three guys like get hot who have been cold. Yeah, I mean, that would help. But they also need like the ball to bounce a certain way. They need somebody to not be in the lineup who would have otherwise killed them. That's like Morales on the Blue Jays. If he missed a game or two, like you get lucky with missing a guy like that or missing Max Scherzer or something, like, you know. They would need a lot of breaks, I think, to fall into the playoffs. Because to me, that's the only way they get in at this point. So catching Atlanta, I mean, it's just it's not a priority in a weird way for me right now. I'd settle for them winning a series and seeing what they can do in the wild card standings. It just seems way more likely.
Yeah, Liz, is it kind of a waste of time to really look at the scoreboard right now, given how the Phillies played this weekend in Toronto?
It's never a waste of time to look at the scoreboard when it's three games. You know, that number might stay the same, but it gets bigger every day. They don't make it smaller.
Sure.
But even then, they have a chance to win it. They're just three games out. They have a lot of NLEs. You know, every team is pretty much playing, not almost, you know, not exclusively, but almost exclusively their division. In September, they play a lot of division games. And so that's why anything could change at any moment.
Yeah, but they've lost to all those teams so many times. Like we've seen them get set up.
That doesn't mean they will do it again in the future.
To me, it's just more evidence like I'm that sure, it's listen, more likely that they do.
You think I'm going to lose? Of course I think they're going to lose. I'm from Philadelphia. What do you want from me? But I'm trying to find a little bit of optimism here that, yes, they've lost to them in the past, but, you know, they've also swept some teams this year. They can do it. You know, the offense has woken up a little bit. Wilson Ramos is alive.
When he plays.
Yes, when he plays, he's alive. And after today, unless he physically can't play tomorrow, he'll be playing tomorrow, I think.
Well, I'll be honest.
Whenever it is to play next.
Like, honestly, I don't want to fall into – I know how easy it is to like trip and fall into that Negadelphian mindset. And on this podcast specifically, I think we've done a good job of maintaining optimism. I can feel myself crossing over.
I do.
I do think that it's I feel like I'm sane enough to know I'm crazy in this sense. Like, I feel like you can have – a healthy amount, not a healthy amount of negativity, but just realistically, I'm with you. They could win these games as easily as they could lose them. It just looks like it's really easy for this team to lose games, and for the style of baseball they've been playing, like, they don't just lose. Sometimes they look like they don't even know the rules, and that's what concerns me. And the headline on Phillies.com right now is like, oh, Ramos leads this outburst of 4 home runs. An outburst offense is an inconsistent.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
Relying on the Phillies to, like, blow out a team once every 4 days and then not score the other 4 or 5 games, that's not a team that can win those games. Like, I'm with you. Yes, obviously, like I said, 3 games behind, that's totally doable mathematically. The Phillies are not mathematically eliminated. But something needs to change, and to me, like, how can they – what else can they change in the amount of time they have that can really instill the kind of confidence you need to believe in this team? At some point, they stop deserving to have that much confidence in them, because some of the games they've lost, it's just been like, oh my God. And that's why I would almost – I came on here – I was going to come on here earlier. I was prepared to say, like, look, everyone, obviously we're going to keep watching the Phillies because we have a sickness. But one thing I can recommend to everyone is that you can take a week off at this point. You know, go for a hike, go on a camping trip, enjoy one of the many other summer activities that exist that have nothing to do with baseball.
The pools are going to close soon. Go, you know, spend a day at the pool. You know,
this is the time that maybe you take advantage of stuff like that. School's going to be starting soon. Like, get out there, enjoy the sun when it's not a heat index of 106 degrees, because the Phillies have made it clear that their time may not be worth your time. Now, come back in a week, and maybe they've broken off a couple of wins and things are different. That's fine. But you've earned a week off. We've all earned a week off from the Phillies based on how poorly they've played.
I'll say this, too. I think you've hit the nail on the head, and I think the tweet – I saw the same tweet you did from Kevin Cooney about how they've been losing games. And that's the problem, is that, you know, they hit – really the way that they are able to score is to hit 4 home runs, and that's just – that's not sustainable. They can't replicate that every single game. So, yes, you have an offense that can put runs on the board when they hit home runs, and they do that better at home. So getting a homestand here this week is going to come at a good time. And I think they play the majority of their games at home in the month of September. So, of course, that's a good thing. But you're also not getting consistency from 3/5 of your starting rotation. The back three, Pivetta, Velasquez, and Eflin right now are not giving – you don't know what you're going to get from start to start with any of those guys. And with the bullpen, too, I mean, the offense did the job in these last 2 games in Toronto, and you've seen Sir Anthony Dominguez and you've seen Victor Arano run into some problems here over the last couple of days. So some of the things you thought you could count on, you necessarily can't count on right now. Some of the things.
When could we count on those, though? Like, this is what the whole season has been. The whole season has been the offense is on, the pitching is off, the bullpen is eh. You know, and then you shake it up like a cup full of Yahtzee dice and you throw it out, and it's, you know, 3 different things. Sometimes all of them are facing the same way and everything is good or bad, but it's so rare for that to happen with this team. And as you said, this is a young team.
Yeah, but
and this is what happens with a young team. But like, it's not like this is any different than what we've seen at various points in the year. It's just happening now, closer to the end of the season as opposed to June.
This is different. I gotta say, this is different. They've been playing much crappier, more consistently crappy, I think, over the past couple of weeks. They seem like they've lost a few, and then they've managed to pull back out and win a few. It feels like this team hasn't been hot or fun to watch since that four game sweep of the Marlins at home. And that was the beginning of this month. It feels like it's been most of a month before this team's pulled out of a tailspin, and they're not even out of it yet.
And the thing that has been most glaring is how they haven't been able to beat bad teams. It's how they lose a series in San Diego to the Padres. They lose a series in Toronto this weekend. They lose a series to a Nationals team that had given up on its season earlier this week. And so the Nationals are still talented, but you know, it's they also didn't they lose a series forgetting the other bad team that they lost a series to now recently, but that's they haven't been earlier in the season. They were taking advantage. The Mets. Yes, that's right. 3 out of 5, they lost to the Mets earlier in the season. They were taking advantage of the bad teams and, you know, struggling against the good teams, sometimes holding their own at others, but also the starting rotation was pretty solid for most of the season. I mean, even when Velasquez and Pivetta would have their moments, it would be a start here and there. Right now, it's just been, and we know the bullpen was up and down. Liz, you're absolutely right about the bullpen and the offense being up and down all season. That is absolutely true. But I got to say, I agree with Justin in that I think these last few weeks have felt different in that, you know, they're one game under 500 since the All-Star break right now. And I get it. I get why fans aren't feeling too good about things right now. This is a series this weekend against a Blue Jays team that really you needed to, they've got to find a way to win a road series once in a while. And they come home to a really tough test this week against the Nationals and the Cubs. They're going to have to face Scherzer and Strasburg again this week. I don't know.
Oh no, I'm with you. This is I know we try to avoid saying this now, but, and I won't say this is a statement series, but if something, it's nice to be able to face the Nationals again so soon after such a disappointing series against them. But like that was such a narratively and statistically disappointing series. I mean, those I guess it was 8 games, 5 against the Mets and 3 against the Nationals, were so, like, the Mets and Padres are the only teams that statistically had a worse offense than the Phillies. They both took a series from the Phillies. The Nationals announced they were quitting on the season, essentially, and then beat the Phillies twice. Once in a pretty big blowout, and then the next night with a walk-off from a guy who couldn't hit 200 the first month of the season in Ryan Zimmerman. And then it took their stopper, Aaron Nola, to really put the brakes on anything. And honestly, that's really a more specific point to our broader point here, is that the only guy that you can rely on this team is Aaron Nola. They have one person who you actually see go out there and you know what you're going to get, and what you're going to get is going to be very good. Everyone else, it's a toss up. You know, you could get a golden sombrero or a home run derby, and it's a mess. And that's, you know, I don't know if that makes these games against the Nationals more important, but at least they get to play them at home this time.
Yeah, that's certainly a part. Now let me throw a couple of numbers at you that will kind of buttress Liz's point too, because she is right. Three games back with 32 left to play is certainly not out of the realm of possibility. So this
seen greater deficits surpassed by teams that were arguably better than this team, but we've seen greater deficits surpassed
for sure. And when you break down the numbers, it's actually. This might make everybody feel a little bit better. So two different things. One, Joe Giglio tweeted this out earlier today. The Braves' record this year against the Marlins and the Mets is 26-9. Versus everybody else in baseball, the Braves are 47-48. They only have 3 of their remaining 32 games against the Marlins or Mets. So, however, they do have 7 games against the Phillies in September, and they are 7-5 against the Phils. So that is something to consider. But they've done a lot.
That's where the season's won and lost. That's it. Like these Nationals, all, you know, these other games are, you know, important as far as overall record. But that's where they can directly make up ground.
If they
can
stay within 7
games to make up ground, that's all. Like they have to take 5 out of 7.
Yeah, and they got to split.
Like, I try to be really elastic on that type of thing, but they have to take 5 out of 7.
Yeah.
They have to do it. There's no way.
And in order for that to work, they need to stay within 1 or 2 games of the Braves here over the next month until they get to those different games, which is important. And the other number that I wanted to mention, this is a number that Barry Zerluga from the Washington Post wrote. He was writing about the Nationals a couple weeks ago about their chances of being able to come back and make the playoffs. Since the 2 wild card format was put into place, the line of demarcation appears to be 87 wins. If you get to 87 wins, the vast majority of the time, you are going to the playoffs. Since the two wild card format was put into place, 59 out of 63 teams, that means only four did not, 59 out of 63 teams to win at least 87 games made the playoffs since the two wild card format. Now, the Phillies are 70 and 60. They would need to go 17 and 15 the rest of the way to hit
just
87
over 500.
Wins.
That's doable.
So those are just
so they need to go 17
about.
And 15 to qualify for a one game playoff wild card game that they would almost certainly lose.
I don't know if you lose that game if you can
I
get
don't
Aaron
know
Nola into
that
I
game.
Know. Oh yeah, throw Nola out there and yeah, okay, anything happens. I hear you. You're absolutely
shut up, Justin.
I hear you. No,
God,
that's not untrue. It's definitely like I just said. He's the one guy you can rely on, and if you're throwing him out there, then yeah.
I mean, I want to win the division, but I'd be thrilled with a wild card game.
And I'm just seeing a lot of sparks flying out of this team right now. And look, I'm not going to not watch. I wouldn't sit there in the dark being grumpy because the Phillies made it into the playoffs. I'm certainly on board for that, and they could certainly win a game like that. But, yeah, honestly, this was my prediction earlier, that they would fight tooth and nail, get into that final game, and then that game would not be particularly close. That seems on brand for this team.
That would be on
brand.
But, you know, let's all prepare ourselves. Like, it's not like we're not prepared for it. Anything, any single minute, any pitch that's thrown after the end of the season is a gift. It is an absolute gift to this team. I mean, to be honest, being in the race through the last week is a gift because you can look at my preseason predictions everywhere I did them. And at no point did I believe the Phillies would be this close. I think I might have projected maybe sometimes second, but I know I projected third at least somewhere else because no way I even projected them to win the wild card. I didn't think they'd be here. I don't think, you know, that's why I can't give up. That's why I'm not going to let anything suck the joy out of this. I've been waiting for this for years. I've been waiting for a chance to get excited about something. And even if they don't always deserve it, I'm going to at least do it because I want to, because it's fun, because baseball is fun, even though it's been a slog of unpleasantness over the last 2 weeks or so.
Sure.
I'm not going to pretend it hasn't grated on me. It's grated on me a lot, but in the end, they haven't lost a lot of ground over the last month.
I think the biggest pisser for me is that I've been railing online, and you guys have seen this, and I know we've been talking about it on the podcast, all the, you know, the negativity when this team was actually doing well, you know, when they were in first place. Just how many fans seemed unable to enjoy it because they were waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, they were waiting for this whole, because they didn't believe in this team. Nobody believed in the Phillies. Nobody believed in the offense or the pitching. Especially they didn't believe in the manager. Just, you know, all of us who were talking about the playoffs, all of us who were talking about how enjoyable this season has been at times and all that, just waiting for the doom and gloom. And now for a lot of people, the shoe has dropped. And now it's a lot of I told you so nonsense. All the fans who had been, you know, and I'm air quoting fans here, all the fans who have been waiting for this team to collapse, so they could say, I told you this team sucks. I told you they didn't have the horses. I told you they didn't have the pieces. They're all coming out of the woodwork now, and that's what's pissing me off most about these last couple weeks. That's even more than my own enjoyment of watching this Phillies team make the playoffs. I want those people to have to shut up.
Yeah, I know it. I'm coming across as the pessimist of the group, but even I, when the team was playing well, in my estimation, was not, you know, focusing on the team. Okay, well, when will they start losing?
I'm not lumping like you into that group, man.
Don Draper quote, what is happiness if not a moment before you need more happiness? Like, you got to be able to think a little bit beyond that, especially when you're watching baseball, especially when you're watching this team. And not only do those people piss me off, but I love the people who are like, Odubel Herrera hasn't hit, like focusing on a particular guy. Like, oh, look at this. Look at his numbers since May. These are bad numbers. And someone says like, oh, can we stop pretending or like supporting this guy? Like the people who are like all the cheerleaders behind him tell us to. Like, first of all, you people can think whatever you want. We're just telling you that you're wrong when a guy is the best hitter on a team and you want to trade him for no reason. At this point, like we talked about last week, a guy like Herrera who's been struggling for a while, yeah, that's something that's got to be remedied in whatever capacity it's going to be remedied. But yeah, I think as a team, there's people who are just sitting around waiting for them to lose. As specific players, they're just waiting for guys to not get hot. I mean, Have you guys not watched baseball? That's all it is guys doing really well and then not doing that really well anymore at various intervals. Sometimes it happens fast. Sometimes they fade away. But it all contributes to the performance of a team. That's kind of what this all is. And if all you're doing is waiting to be miserable, then welcome to Philip. You're in the right city. Congratulations. You're correct. Yeah.
I hate to be the downer here, but these people aren't going to shut up until the only time they will shut up is when the Phillies win a World Series. And then we get 2 months or maybe three, but probably two of silence from those people because the Phillies have won everything they possibly can. And so there's nothing to on them for.
Well, they're just
not going to shut up because there's always going to be something to criticize. There's always, you know, something that they know that's better than what everybody else knows. I am not in any way talking about our commenters at all. All of you are angel people.
Perfect.
You're perfect.
Hey, how many of our...
No, but they're people, they're just nudges. They're always right. They're never going to be satisfied because that means that they weren't right because they have to be right.
How many of our colleagues were digging their fingernails into their coffee tables watching a preseason Eagles game months after, and I really shudder to say this because I still can't believe it happened, months after the Eagles won the Super Bowl, something no one expected to see in their lifetime. And yet one preseason game was enough for people to be like, you know, I said I wasn't going to do this, but here's my 4,000 word treatise on why the Eagles Super Bowl is a lie and everything is back to being miserable.
That's how we're comfortable.
That is our
That's
city.
How we're comfortable.
Yep. Why be a sports fan?
When you've been disappointed as often as Philadelphia fans have been in various ways throughout from 1920 all the way up through, I mean, there were a handful of good years in like the 70s. There was one good year in the 60s sort of. And then there were some good times in the early 90s and then it was crap. Like there haven't been a whole lot of good times for the Phillies, you know, a lot of repeat times. Like we remember one of the best times in franchise history. It happened a decade ago, some of it less, you know, and Eagles fans are, it's, you could write a book on the psychological problems with all of us.
I mean,
us who have been into it, you know, so I get it, but I still want them all to just shut up because it's like Travis Hughes, friend of the good fight, Travis Hughes, who works for CSN. No, that's not right. NBC Sports Philly.
Mm-hmm.
NBC Sports Philly, you know, he took a little iPhone video of himself. He's like of the screen of the Eagles preseason game and then biffing it. And then he panned a little bit to his right and it was the Eagles Super Bowl hat on his knee. He's like, oh, I look at this and I'm like, this doesn't matter. This doesn't matter at all. It's the freaking preseason.
Right. Right. And, you know, it's kind of funny that, you know, we live in this city where it's, I think everybody doesn't want to recognize that it's actually been a pretty good last decade. I mean, this generation of Philly fans are spoiled compared to past generations. I mean, 2 titles in 10 years. Give me a break.
Yeah.
I'm satisfied. You know?
There's a lot of people who have, I think younger people have a different definition of disappointment, whereas like, oh, the Flyers got all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals and then lost, whereas like the equivalent of that to the older generation is, oh, yeah, the Flyers, you know, they actually sniffed somewhere higher than third place in the division. Like, this is amazing. This is like a watchable sport. And the Phillies, yeah, even more so. I feel like I'm thinking about that now, just sitting here, like the perspective of, like, John, you were 17 in 93, not to age, you know, anybody.
No,
but
aged myself, yeah.
It was kindergarten, first grade era for me. And so, like, for me, that was some of the first baseball I actually remember. And then everything after that was just sort of, I don't remember being disappointed, just kind of like bored or numb to like that rest of that mid-90s early 2000s like Phillies baseball. It's like, you know, there was no sexy superstars here. The guy, you know, Scott Rolen came and went because he hated it. Like,
yeah, that's a sexy superstar right there,
you know, like
Scott Rolen.
There's nothing. Jeez. Like, what do you want from us? Like,
Mike Lieberthal.
I don't remember like
posters
going to bed
on the walls of every Philadelphia girl.
I don't remember like crying myself to sleep. I just remember being like, oh, 14 games behind the Braves. Okay. I'll be outside. Like,
that's right.
I won't be paying attention to this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things I did want to talk about following the game on Sunday was, and you mentioned it briefly a little while ago, Justin, it kind of made me a little bit annoyed too. Something Rhys Hoskins said after the game, talking about intensity and focus. He said after the game, quote, "There was just a little bit more intensity today, a little sharper focus. I think everybody got here this morning and realized that this was a big game. They're all big, but this particular one felt a little bigger after a tough loss on Saturday." I got to say, I know that we can't expect Major League Baseball players who play 162 games. It is a marathon of a season. You can't be, Chase Utley is a special case. You can't be super duper intense, Chase Utley like intense, for every single one of those games. But I don't understand this. I don't understand how you come into this game on Sunday extra with more intensity than you did the games on Saturday, Friday, the ones against the Nationals earlier in the week when you had a chance to bury a divisional opponent. That blows my mind. And especially, you're in a pennant race. You're slipping behind in the standings. The implication is that you weren't as intense in those other games. How do you get more intense for this game? I ask that question both like how do you actually physically get more intense for this game, and how do you allow that to happen, Liz? Maybe that comment rubbed me the wrong way more than anybody else, but I didn't understand it.
I think maybe it's that it's the end of a series. Maybe he's a baseball player. Not every baseball player is great at sort of taking feeling and putting it into words, as some people aren't. Most people aren't. Baseball players aren't, you know, special or unspecial in that. I can see how it would rub you the wrong way. I mostly think it's just baseball player words. It's just words that baseball players say to the beat writers. You've all seen Bull Durham,
right? Yeah.
It's a grab bag sometimes.
The cliches,
you know.
And stuff,
maybe
yeah.
It was different. Maybe this was different. I have to admit, it's been an age since I've read a game story. I watch games. I look at Twitter sometimes, but I draw my own conclusions from what I see. So maybe he said some things at some point that have been similar to that, you know. But if it's unusual, then maybe that's a reason to pay attention. I don't know. Like, I could see why it rubs you the wrong way, because you're like, why were you not intense about all these other games that we here sitting on the couch watching on our computers and televisions are intense about? You know, I think some of it is, you know, the flipping of a month, the flipping of a year feels significant. The ending of a series feels significant. Being at risk for a sweep feels significant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's some of what it was. It's like, this would be, you know, if we lose here, we're being swept. We couldn't even put up a fight in one game. And if we're swept going into, you know, games with a divisional opponent, you know, I want us to feel good today. Maybe he's applying something that hindsight is what it is. He's looking at this win and now looking back at it, thinking maybe there was something different about every today. Wasn't there? We won, which is different than all the other games that we played here.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if they'd lost, would he still have said that they came out with more intensity today? I mean, I doubt I would have heard, yeah, we came out knowing we needed this win today. We came out with more intensity, and we lost. I don't know how that happened, Justin. I mean, what do you think?
I think that we saw in the offseason that Rhys Hoskins' job isn't just to be like the new Phillies star that people buy merchandise for. I think he's also got the role where he's a team ambassador. And I think you saw after the game today, he put on his little ambassador hat. And I think he was trying to do some PR work with like give the fans something to say like, hey, yeah, we were a little more intense today, and I think that like that's what put us over the edge, and I think the fans should definitely not tune out and do what Justin's saying and like go outside and not look at their TVs because we're frustrating them. I think he was trying to play something up in that regard. frankly, the timing was a little strange because, as the reason we're talking about this is, you can easily ask the question of, huh, well, where's that intensity been? And if you can just have it, why didn't you have it for the other four games of this series that were all bad losses? Why didn't you have it for three out of the five games against the Mets?
That's the thing. It's all hindsight. He's looking back at the game and thinking, oh, well, I mean, we won. What was different? Oh, we were all more intense today. Why were we intense? Because we actually strung some hits together.
Yeah, we did it, guys. Don't worry. We can come through. And I at this point, and I said something to this effect on Twitter a couple of days ago, like, I don't need any more, like, lessons on how the Phillies could have won or should have won or did win, if you think about it, a loss differently. they need to win some actual games. And, like, that's a great little nothing baseball quote that I'm not holding Rhys Hoskins personally accountable for.
Right.
But, like, it's time to win a bunch of games in a row. If they put themselves in this position, can they really not keep themselves in this position or go a little farther? I mean, we watched Bryce Harper make a couple of comments similar to this earlier in the season that were just cringeworthy, where he would be like, oh, the game, you know, we're pretty far back in the division, but I'm excited about where we are because now there's like this added challenge and it'll be even like cooler when we win because we'll have to come from so far behind. And you're like, wow.
Right,
is that,
I remember that.
Is that chapter one of
we'll
the...
have to be all so super duper awesome to surpass this challenge. And I'm excited to see how we are totally going to do it.
Right. And he's like reading from an index card that somebody in the ticket office just handed him and is still with him in view of the camera. Like, yeah, give me a break.
By the way, Monday is Dollar Dog Night. So
to book your tickets.
Yeah, Monday's Dollar Dog Night. So make sure to bring all your kids out. No, you're right. And listen, I don't want to get on Rhys Hoskins because we love Rhys Hoskins on the podcast. And I think you're right. Liz, I think I agree with what you said. I didn't think about it that way. This is probably just maybe an inartful way of saying, you know, they were playing really hard on Sunday. And that's not to say, I mean, I think you can probably look, you know, as you're getting ready for that day's game, think that you're working hard and then realize maybe there's, you know, another notch that you could get to. But like I said, hitting four home runs makes it certainly look like you were more intense. I don't know that extra intensity allowed for you to barrel those balls up. If that is the case, if intensity is going to allow this team to barrel more balls up, then I hope the intensity continues. And it should continue because...
What even is intensity, though?
Well,
like,
I don't
know if
it's just like
words.
You're bearing down on the pitcher more.
Does that mean? Are they not always doing that? Are they not always... Like, it's this ephemeral thing that he's saying. Yeah. What he's saying they had is we had the luck and, you know, the luck, essentially, to win. And it made us look all intense because we were doing it all in a burst.
You know what intensity does? I think intensity helps you to field more cleanly, to make crisper plays, to be smarter on the bases. I don't think...
Focus. It's just focus.
I don't know. And I think maybe it can help with pitching. I think if a pitcher is more intense and more focused, bearing down on certain counts in certain situations, I think that can have an effect. But from a hitting standpoint, it doesn't make any sense to me. But I am not a professional baseball player, I'll have you guys know, and so I can't say that I know for sure what you know, how intensity works and doesn't work, how focus works and doesn't work in a major league locker room and on the field. So I just thought it was an interesting thing to bring up because I read it, and it's not that it rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know if I'd put it that way. It was just a comment that made me go, huh. There was a level that they hadn't gotten to yet, and I guess I just wonder if they'll be able to sustain it for the next month, because now we have entered the sprint of the Major League Baseball season. You know, we talk about a season as a marathon. It's officially a sprint. They've only got 32 games left here, which actually, I don't know if you guys notice this. Does it feel like there should only be like a week or two left? When it felt like that, you know, as they've been going through this losing streak, it kind of felt like the season was going to be over in like a week or two. And maybe that's because the football season's almost here or whatever. I don't know. Just mentally, there's some kind of block there. But, you know, there's still another 32 games. That is still a lot of baseball left to play.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like, that's been part of the dramatics that we've all been partaking in, is that after every loss, there's been a reminder like, oh, don't forget, we're still over a month of baseball remaining. And it's a testament to how long this horrible sport goes on for every summer, that you can watch baseball for a while and then be like, don't forget, in 1 month, the season will be halfway over. And then there's several more months after that. And we're just in that part where, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because the past couple of years, this has been definite checkout territory. I mean, late August with the 2013-2014 Phillies was a time that I don't think any, I don't know if history is going to remember it, because who was keeping track of what was going on with the Phillies at that time? I mean, I think we have like a sad, weird blur of a loose collection of events that occurred, but they could be assigned to anything that happened between 2012 and 2017. This season's the outlier. You know, we're aware of this team, more aware of this team than we have been of the past couple of teams. And maybe that's why it feels like they're really coming down to the wire here, because they put themselves in a position where they could actually be something much more exciting than we've seen the past couple of years, having already been very exciting. At this point in the season, you're either checking out or you're not. And in this case, it's like, well, we're used to checking out now, and maybe it's time to keep watching.
So I'm not going to lie, Justin, and I think you feel this way too. And we're going to bring the podcast listeners in here on this little huddle here. The last year when you and I were doing the Sunday night shows in the end of August, early September, man, it was hard to get up for some of those podcasts, because I mean, it's just there was nothing. There was nothing like this to talk about.
What the hell were we talking about?
I have no earthly idea. You know what? Though the kids all got called up at the end of last year, so I think we were just excited about seeing J.P. Crawford do things and Nick Williams and Rhys Hoskins hit a bunch of home runs in a row. But
forget about that. That was super cool.
That was fun. Yeah, I mean, we had to suffer through the Michael Saunders era, but to get there. Ugh. But once we did.
And God. Just, hey,
by the way, and you know what? Maybe this is a good thing to end the podcast on. As we're going through this last month, there's no guarantee that this team is going to be good this last month. It could be a losing month. They could fall out of the picture in the next couple of weeks. But here's the thing to remember. At the beginning of last year, Michael Saunders was in the starting lineup. Howie Kendrick was in the starting lineup. Cameron Rupp was in the starting lineup. Tommy Joseph was in the starting lineup.
Okay, I remember that guy.
Single day they were in the starting lineup. And so, you know, we were, you know, that's when I started my whole trust the prospects nonsense, because I couldn't, it was so hard for me to sit here and look at that lineup every day and know that that was our reality, you know? So where are we now? I still don't know, Liz, where a lot of these young guys are. I still don't know where Kingery is. I don't know where Crawford is. I don't know how good Alfaro is going to be. I think I have a pretty good idea about Hoskins. I have a better feeling about Nick Williams and Michael Franco now than I did a year ago. But so many of the position players we still don't know about. I think we know a little bit more about Velasquez now than we knew last year. But Pivetta is still a question mark. So is Eflin. The bullpen. Everybody in the bullpen's a damn question mark. Nevertheless, the future is kind of unwritten for a lot of these guys, and you know an exciting offseason is coming up. This is just, we're in such a better place now, 70 wins here in the 2018 season, with a chance to actually go to the playoffs this year, Liz. I just think it's important everybody thinks about that as we're all grousing about the team losing, this losing streak they've had over the last few weeks.
That's why I can't ever lose hope, because I have been, you know, the managing editor of The Good Fight since 2013. And that was the first year that they finished below 500 since 2006, maybe before that. And I've presided over a lot of shitty years, a lot of bad years, a lot of bad games, bad players, dudes who, I mean, one of our favorite games is, hey, remember that guy? And we all just naming guys like we haven't heard of them in an age. But it's not that we haven't heard of them. It's that they were bad and should be forgotten. And yet we can't, because we were all there. A lot of us have been there the whole time. And, you know, for every bad recap I did, I thought, this is not forever. I'm not kidding. Pretty much every losing recap I wrote between, you know, 2013 and, you know, the end of last year, I thought to myself, this is not how it's always going to be. Sometimes the losses will feel worse because you expected more. But these are, you know, this isn't that I feel worse. It's that it is worse because I expect exactly this. And now I get to expect more of this team. I get to see things that are exciting. You know, it's not perfect, but I don't demand perfection from my baseball team. And no one should demand perfection from their baseball team. I just, you know, demand that they try because they have ability, they have the ability and potential to do so much. And I would rather see a team with a lot of potential kind of eat it down the stretch than see a team with no potential continue to have no potential through, you know, the last ragged, raspy breath of this freaking season. So I can't lose hope. There's no way I'm losing hope. You know, there's no way I'm going to be anything but grateful for everything I've seen this season.
Well, let's take this opportunity to kind of wrap things up, and we'll if anybody has any closing thoughts, Justin, any final closing thoughts for this episode?
Did you guys see Carlos Gomez give a bat to a little kid in the stands earlier today? I wanted to bring this up. I know we didn't really have a particularly negative baseball episode, but and I know we've been harping on the little kids and baseball component because of the Little League World Series last week. That's something that probably doesn't – you can't talk too much about it. But Carlos Gomez, down with the Rays, there was just a shot of him during a game giving a bat to a little kid, and the little kid, like – freaks out, and then they have like a little moment together, and you can't hear what they're saying, but it's clearly like, you know, a brilliant, perfect moment for MLB, PR. But at the same time, I think we just, you know, acknowledge these individual players who go the extra mile for a fan like that. Like, that's awesome. And the Phillies, you know what? That's actually another point to bring up. Liz and I do continued success, and we talk about the 1993 team, and a noticeable number of those guys have gone on to really out themselves as a bunch of really, really dumb assholes. The 2008 team, not nearly the case. And we're fortunate that the team that we do focus on that won that World Series 10 years ago is like a bunch of guys who are like Chase Utley, who is a model of a force for good in with the new organizations he's played for. Cole Hamels, who's still playing and now a force to be reckoned with the Cubs. Ryan Howard, who's a children's book author. Jimmy Rollins, who's got a delightful family to follow on Instagram. And the current crop of guys who if you're counting like Reese Hoskins as a team leader, I mean, you know, we were harping on him for an innocuous comment tonight, but he seems like a pretty reliable, fun guy. He stands up for his teammates.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's good with kids. They're all good with kids. We all saw that interview Aaron Nola and Reese Hoskins did with the little kid.
It was delightful. So cool. how engaged they were. That was really neat.
Seeing that stuff in baseball with like a guy like Carlos Gomez is cool. And then being able to look at your own team and see guys like that exist is awesome. That being said, let's win some more games.
Oh God, please, please.
Yeah. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
Just win some more games. I'm recapping a lot of games. I'm going to probably be recapping a fair amount of games in September. And I would like to recap a few more wins. I feel like I've done a lot of losses this year for whatever reason. So that might just be, you know, me thinking that I've done a lot of losses, but I'd like to see some more wins. Please, Phillies, please. A
couple final thoughts from me. It looks like on Tuesday we get another Scherzer-Nola rematch. That's on MLB's app. That's what they have. Scherzer versus Nola on Tuesday night at 7:05. Get your tickets now, Phillies fans. And also, perhaps this is a good omen. We'll leave on a positive note. The Hawaiian team won the Little League World Series on Sunday. The last time the Hawaiian Little League won the World Series was in the year 2008.
Well, that shuts me up.
Yeah. So to hell with your negative Nancyism there, Mr. Justin Klug. Hawaii's got this. So it's the spirit of Shane. Shane Victorino's spirit is going to live on and take the 2018 Phils on. Anyway.
Is he going to be there? Like, I feel like when that team comes home to Hawaii, he will be there.
Oh, I would imagine. Not? Yeah.
Like, he's got to be like, you know, the Major League Baseball. Are there any other incredibly famous Major League Baseball players from Hawaii? He might be the only one.
I don't think incredibly famous. No.
He's the most famous of them all. I would imagine he'll definitely be welcoming them home. That would be such a good man. That'd be fantastic. All right. Well, listen, yes, this may have been not the most optimistic of our podcast, but hey, we live in the real world, and we've been watching a Phillies team that has struggled over the last couple of weeks, but they have a chance here over this last month to get back in the game. And so we will be walking along with you through the frustration and hopefully through some more good times here as the calendar flips to September. That'll do it for episode number 206 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Liz and Justin for once again co-hosting the podcast with me. And if you haven't done so, guys, please subscribe to Hittin' Season by going to the Good Fight podcast feed and downloading this podcast. Download The Dirty Inning while you're there. Just become a subscriber to the Good Fight feed, whether it's on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere you get podcasts, and leave ratings and reviews. Both of those things help the podcast out in a big, big way. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.